You are listening to Amplify Your Success Podcast 191, and today, let's learn how to turn a management mess into leadership success. I've got a great guest lined up. I can't wait to share him with you, so let's get started.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Success Podcast. Hey, are you a thought leader, creative entrepreneur, or change maker, and want to magnify your impact, boost influence, while creating a financial abundance? Stay tuned for today's inspiring episode with your host, Melanie Benson.
Hey there, inspired entrepreneurs and business leaders. It's your host, Profit Amplifier, Melanie Benson here. And I got a question for you. Do you have a message that is pulling in your ideal clients and opportunity? Or do you feel invisible to your best clients? If you are getting on podcasts and sharing your message, you're doing virtual summits, you're speaking on stages, you're putting emails out to your community, and you're just getting crickets, or you're not getting the traction you think you should, then chances are you do not have a message that's been magnetized. And I have a system that will help you transform the message you're putting out there so that it's not only magnetic to perfect clients, but it opens up a boatload of opportunities, ideal opportunities that help elevate you and your authority. Now, I've opened the doors to my 8-week Get Magnetic Messaging program. We only teach it twice a year. This is the last time we're teaching it this year. And if you want to get results like the clients did who went through the last one, where they learned one tiny thing to do differently that got them 83% conversion on their emails, that helped one of our guests go from a no lead magnet to a lead magnet that tripled in opt-ins in the first 24 hours, if you want to be able to get on podcasts and actually get clients like two of our graduates did immediately, then you want to go to the getmagneticmessaging.com website and take advantage of the limited spots open and join us for this next round. I guarantee you it will transform not just your message, but your confidence to get out and attract those perfect clients and opportunities. Now, let's get into today's episode. Today, we're talking about how to move from management mess to leadership success. I'm joined by a really special guest today, Scott Miller, who is a 24-year associate of Franklin Covey. And he today serves as the Executive Vice President of Thought Leadership. Scott hosts the world's largest and fastest growing podcast and newsletter devoted to leadership development on leadership. Scott is the author of the multi-week Amazon number one new release, Management Mess to Leadership Success, 30 Challenges to Become the Leader You Would Follow, and the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Everyone Deserves a Great Manager, The 6 Critical Practices for Leading a Team. Scott authors a weekly leadership column for Inc.com and is a frequent contributor on podcasts and webinars, just like we're doing today. And I love this little personal nugget about Scott. Scott previously worked for the Dizzy Development Company and grew up in Central Florida. I just plugged that Disney park right in there. And he lives today in Salt Lake City, Utah with his wife and 3 sons. And Scott, thank you so much for being here. You and I have been going back and forth on this for a while, and I really think it's perfect timing to have this conversation about leadership today. But I have to go to the personal side for just a second. My family is really big Disney fans, and we just watched that Disney Plus channel special on how Disney came out in the world, like the 3-part series, whatever it was. And it was so fascinating. So we're big Disney fans over here.
Well, I was too. Thank you, Melanie, for inviting me today. I had a great run at the Disney company, and then they invited me to leave, which is the way Disney says get out. So I was invited to seek other opportunities after 4 years in my early 20s, but I have very fond memories. I worked on the corporate side, on the real estate development side, and to this day, I'm still friends with those who invited me to leave.
Yeah. Well, that's always the perfect segue to find the thing you're really supposed to do. And thank goodness you landed where you did, because I'm sure there was a lot of really great benefits in that. And I'm also a huge fan of Franklin Covey. I was telling you in the green room before we came on, Back in my corporate days, when I worked for a Fortune 500 company, Franklin Covey was the very first training I ever went to. And that time management training served as a bedrock for my productivity. The things I was able to accomplish through that were significant. So super excited to bring you on today.
Well, thank you. Our company's been in business for 40 years. Like any organization who wants to thrive, we've had to change and change substantially. And I was privileged to have worked under our co-founder, Dr. Covey, for about 15 years prior to his passing 8 years ago, and have learned a few things along the way. Like many of your listeners, my career has typically been two steps forward, one step back, or in some cases, two steps forward, three steps back. But if I can share some insights today, I'll be delighted.
Well, I think anytime we get to learn from someone who's been in the trenches for a while, especially if that trench is a successful company, there's so much to learn. And before I dig into some of the really beautiful takeaways from your book, I want to just better understand and bring our listeners up to speed with how you came to write a book about management messes.
Well, it was not popular in the company, right? I'll say that. In fact, it's actually, you know, it's been the target of some frustration by some. But here's what I decided. I turned 50, and I kind of cared less what most people thought about me, right? I mean, I care about my wife and my creator and my sons, but I kind of stopped living my life based on what other people wanted for me or thought I should do. And so I began to realize that I had a story to tell. And Melanie, that story is that leadership of people is not for everyone. Not everyone should be a leader of people. And that isn't a very popular topic in a lot of leadership development companies, right? I get the idea that everyone has leadership within them, right? Lead a project, lead yourself, lead your 401k. But just like not everyone should be a commercial airline pilot, not everyone should be an anesthesiologist, not everyone should be a leader of people. In fact, most of us that our leaders probably aren't aligned to the right position. You know, because you are an entrepreneur or a founder or a creator or an owner does not mean you are cut out to be the leader of people in your organization. Too often we promote people into leadership roles for the wrong reasons, right? The most efficient dental hygienist becomes the managing dental hygienist, or the best and most creative digital designer becomes the leader of that team, or in most cases, the top salesperson becomes the sales leader. Rarely are those competencies as an individual producer transferred over into a leadership role. In fact, often they're inversely correlated. So I wrote a book around how messy, how difficult, how unrelenting, how sometimes unrewarding leadership can be. But if you are going to be a leader of people, here are 30 challenges that you're going to face. And through my own, hopefully vulnerable, sometimes uproariously funny, but certainly raw experiences will help people better navigate and maybe step around a lot of the potholes and in close to sometimes career-ending actions, people can avoid the same messes that I experienced.
Mm. Well, you know, I think there's no better way to bond with someone than to share our failures, right? Especially the ones we learned from. And, you know, as you're talking, I was kind of being taken back in history to a time when I worked for that Fortune 500 company. And I remembered they actually promoted people to get them out of the role they were in and make it sound like it was a good thing. So they would move them out of their ineffective.
Oh, that's still happening.
Yeah. Right.
Come on, Melanie.
Right. Well, and, you know, just think about all the reasons to become an entrepreneur. For me, was one of them was like, I don't want that to be my world anymore. So it is really interesting that we don't have as more management messes than we do already. So I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about it. And what I was like really genuinely curious about, because so many people listen to Amplify Your Success as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, and somebody who started a business because they're passionate about this thing. And then as their business grows and as their role expands, they start to realize, if I want to grow, I have to lead and manage people. How do you find that translates, this management mess translates to the entrepreneur business world?
Well, I think because you are the owner, because you are the founder, because you are the creator, does not mean you need to be the CEO or you need to be the president. You might choose to make yourself the, you know, chief revenue officer or chief visionary or chairman of the board. Or maybe you are the CEO, but you have a COO that's actually dealing with the day in, day out people issues. I don't know that being an entrepreneur automatically qualifies you for being a great leader of people. It may mean that you're especially bold or visionary or creative, or you're great at communicating vision or creating strategy. So the first advice I would give is, if you are an entrepreneur, check your ego. Recognize that, you know, humility is actually born out of confidence. Confident people can in fact be humble. It's arrogant leaders that are incapable of being humble. And the more humble you are, the more self-aware you are. The more self-aware you are, the less likely you are to need to be the smartest person in the room. And when you don't need to be the smartest person in the room, then you are capable of looking around and saying, you know, is there a better COO? Is there someone who I should promote that can actually solve the culture issues or the people promotion issues or the having difficult conversations? Because you have mortgaged your home twice does not correlate into you being a great leader of people. By the way, that's no shame. I don't think as the entrepreneur, the founder, you have to be the leader of all of the people. You can appoint someone else to do that. Now, as the owner, as the founder, you probably have a key role in playing culture and what, you know, in the role that culture plays. But I would take a step back and recognize that because you're the founder or the owner does not necessarily mean you need to be the leader of the people. I think too often entrepreneurs hang on to that role too long, and they can't possibly be all things to all people. They can't, you know, be the investor relations person. They can't be the CFO. They can't be the chairman of the board. They can't be out, you know, chasing new trends and technologies or partnerships or you name it. You can't be the chief innovations person and the CMO. You got to pick what are your talents and then be humble enough to surround yourself with people who might complement your areas of, you know, expertise, or for that matter, your deficiencies. We all have them, your messes, very well.
I think that's well said. And I'm imagining that a lot of people, and I know I certainly went through this stage myself, a lot of people get to the point where you're like, well, I should be able to do this. Like, why would I hire someone else to do something I should be able to do?
Oh gosh, yeah, right? I don't agree.
Right.
I don't agree.
I don't agree at all. And I think really understanding where your superpower is in the business, where's the thing that when you do that, the business can grow quickly, everybody's in their right role on the bus, and the business has its best chance of serving its client well, then that's when a business can grow. And so I think it'd be really valuable to talk about some of the and you call them leadership challenges. So maybe that's where we'll
messes.
Yeah. But where's the place that you how do we start to recognize that maybe unconsciously we have become a management mess? It's maybe even holding our business back. How do we start to recognize that as a business owner or business leader?
Yeah, I think the premise lies in the title of the book, right? Is that everybody has a mess going on. And to deny it means that you're not self-aware. We all have messes. Everybody's talking about them. Everybody knows them. Your receptionist does, your board of directors, your lender, your assistant, your colleagues, your vendors. Everybody knows your messes. So why not just own them? Like literally own your mess. Because when as a leader, you are brutally honest with yourself by owning your own mess, then you build a culture where it's safe for others to own their messes. Because if you're this sort of Teflon CEO, or you're incapable of ever, you know, showing the kinks in your own armor, how would you possibly expect other people to admit to their own messes? Now, owning your mess, Melanie, doesn't mean that you license bad behavior. It doesn't mean that you wallow in things you can't, you know, figure out. No, we're all moving from mess to success. I think one of the first ways is to really assess what is your self-awareness. How true do you see yourself? Go around to your associates, appropriately given your culture, and ask them, what's it like to be in a meeting with me? What's it like to work on a product launch with me? What's it like to work a trade show with me? What's it like to go on vacation with me? What's it like to be married to me? Go around to all of your life roles and get some feedback from people who you trust. Now, you must make it safe for them to tell you their truth. Most people don't tell the owner, the founder, what it's like to be at a trade show with them. They're going to lie to you. So the more that you recognize they're going to lie to you, you have to make it safer for them to give you feedback by not refuting it, not denying it, not disputing it. Just, you know, show some vulnerability. So when I do that, what do you think's going on? Am I insecure? Am I threatened? Am I jealous? When is the last time the owner ever asked a salesperson? So in meetings, when I get short, what do you think is going on? Do you think I'm jealous of something? Oh my gosh, people would pass out if the owner actually admitted that. Owners are people too. Because you are the entrepreneur does not make you superhuman. It makes you probably even more human. So one is I would constantly be on the hunt for feedback about yourself. Yes, you can overdose on feedback. Not everybody's feedback is helpful. You have to curate what that looks like and from who. First, recognize you have some messes, fine-tune what they are, and then go to work on deciding, are they worth solving? You know, I can read a P&L, but I can't calculate net present value, right? It's not worth my time, right? I'm gonna hire a CFO. But there are messes in my life where I can conquer them and need to become a better leader of my people. I think first is really kind of, you know, hierarchically organizing which messes are worth it for me to conquer and which ones are not.
Yeah, that's a really important skill in life. Where do I grow? Yeah. What's worth putting some time and attention to? And where do I just have to accept this is my thing? Like, this is where I'm at, and it's not worth spending time and energy to resolve it. I am like making up in my head some examples of what I think a management mess might look like. And I'm just wondering if you have like a couple of specific examples someone might recognize in their business, the way it's unfolding or as they're trying to scale.
I do. You know, challenge 19 of these 30 challenges is called protect your team from urgencies. I don't know about you, but Melanie, I love a good crisis. And if one doesn't exist, oh, I'll cook one up. Because I do my best work in like the tempest, right? I do my best work under pressure. I get an adrenaline rush. I get like a dopamine squirt in my brain, so to speak, under pressure. No one has ever invited me to give the eulogy at a funeral, but I am the first person to evacuate a burning building, you know, render aid at a car wreck. I mean, I do well under pressure. I think a lot of entrepreneurs often do the same. The problem is, in order for us to feel important, to feel validated, we sometimes will elevate things artificially to an urgency mode. And the more we recognize that, the more we can laugh about that. The more we can say to our team, hey, everybody here knows I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. So if you ever see me cooking up a crisis, well, you just tell me, maybe in private, maybe, you know, I'm a human too. But I think if you make a culture such that where you actually can talk to the boss about real things and their own foibles, you build a transparent culture. People love to come to work because the boss isn't untouchable. The boss isn't the only genius in the building. So the first is, I would say, is you might need to protect your team from urgencies. And Melanie, that might mean you might need to sometime protect them from yourself. Another one that I would mention is challenge 10. Make time for relationships. Let me tell you, I've been in this business a long time, 30 years. And this idea that people are a company's most valuable asset, it's not true. It's total bunk. People are not an organization's most valuable asset. It is the relationships between those people. Because Melanie can have a black belt Six Sigma certification, and Scott can be a Rhodes Scholar from Oxford. But if Melanie and Scott can't get along, can't collaborate, can't compliment, can't forgive, can't pre-forgive each other, then I don't need you. I don't need gutless wonders or geniuses that work independent. And the same goes with the entrepreneur, the owner, is you have to recognize that you're a culture carrier, and how you treat your people is fundamentally correlated with their level of engagement, with how long they stay, with how much they steal, with how much they defend your brand, with how hard they work. You know, another HR fallacy that I'll bunk is that leaders create engagement. let me be clear. Leaders do not create engagement. Leaders create the conditions for other people to choose their own level of engagement, high or low. So when you realize that as the leader, I can't force you to be engaged. What I can do is to build a high trust culture. I can not gossip about you. I can talk straight. I can have high courage conversations. I can admit when I'm wrong and offer apologies without excuses. These are fundamental behaviors that might seem like kindergarten, but these are the reasons that people quit. People don't quit their jobs, Melanie. You know this. They quit bad bosses and they quit corrupt cultures. So this brings me to challenge 10, make time for relationships. This is the backbone of your organization because everything can be copied. Your logo, your technology, your profit margins, your price points, your supply chain, everything can and is being copied. What cannot be copied is your culture, is how people work well together. At the end of the day, you're the model of that. Let me share one final point on this and I'll take a breath. Our co-founder, Dr. Stephen R. Covey, wrote this book called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's in its 30th year, 40 million copies sold. What I'm going to say next, I think, is profound. So I'd ask your listeners to listen in before they tune me out. The book was called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Oftentimes, it's referred to wrongly as The 7 Habits of Highly Efficient People. There's a difference between being efficient and being effective. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of business owners, a lot of founders probably are very efficient, very productive people, like I am. Most of my career success has come from me being the guy that outworks everybody, right? I get up at 3, I write my ink column till 4, I write my books until 6, I'm a dad from 6 to 8, I'm a C-level, officer from 8 until 6. I'm a dad again from 6 to 10 and a husband. And I'm really a productive person. The problem comes for those of us who are naturally inclined to be efficient, to move fast, to be productive. We tend to take that same strength, Melanie, and we move it over into our relationships. And Dr. Covey taught us you cannot be efficient with people. You need to be effective. That his quote was, with people, slow is fast, and fast is slow. So the big idea there around making time for relationships is don't let your efficiency mindset interrupt your relationship. There's a time to be efficient, right? Social media, some meetings, washing the car with lunch. But there's a time to be effective. And it's almost in every encounter with another person.
I love that. I'm taking myself back on my business journey as a leader as I'm listening to you and thinking, you just nailed every big mistake I made in the beginning. And I really thought I was an effective manager until I realized I wasn't. And I burned
Same
out
with
people.
Me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's why I wrote the book. Dr. Covey said common knowledge isn't common practice. We know these things. Nothing you or I are saying right now is an epiphany for people. We're reminding people the value of it. We've all struggled with this. I have more I can talk about that are in the book, but you've hit it right in the head, is that to know but not to do is not to know. And sometimes we have to reground ourselves to just common principles of interpersonal effectiveness. In fact, I'd argue that most successful entrepreneurs are probably very curious, very hardworking, indefatigable in terms of energy or focus. And in most cases, perhaps their key skill isn't developing enduring relationships. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. It means you're a person. It means your skills are elsewhere. My natural talent is actually not developing relationships. I have good friends. I'm a trustworthy person, but I do everything fast. I order fast. I eat fast. I drive fast. I play tennis fast. I mow the lawn fast. I read fast. I write fast. I talk fast. I think fast. It's exhausting.
No one can catch up with you, right?
It's very true. And so I have to be really mindful that when I'm in a one-on-one meeting and I'm giving someone perhaps high courage feedback, I'm giving them feedback on their blind spots, I got to slow down. I got to think about my body language, my rate, my tone, my pitch. There is a time for me to be efficient. And in most cases with people, I need to close my laptop, turn off my phone, turn my back towards the clock, take off my watch, and really focus intently on this relationship. It doesn't come naturally to me, but I've, with practice and with knowledge, I've definitely improved over time.
And I want to put this bridge between the traditional employee relationship and a business owner who may be building out a support team as virtual contractors and virtual assistants and remote employees. These principles are all the same. They just may unfold differently. And what I can tell you, having built a business for 20 years now using virtual employees, virtual contractors, virtual assistants and virtual contractors, every one of the things you're talking about is critical to keep a high quality team moving positively towards the goal. And that efficiency thing will destroy your team that you've worked so hard to attract and align with. So these are really great principles.
In fact, Melanie, I think now more than ever, because I'm much older than you, I'm sure. I'm 52 almost next week. And, you know, I was raised in the era where you stayed companies for 25, 30, 40 years, right? I'm 25 years at Franklin Covey. My dad was 34 years at Lockheed Martin. The average tenure now is somewhere between 18 months and 3 years. So people will leave on a heartbeat. It's the common thing now. 3 years is a long career. But let me remind your listeners, people do not quit leaders who love them. Now, I say love appropriately, right? But people ask me all the time, why don't you quit Franklin Covey? Oh my gosh, it's 25 years. Well, I say, it's not because I don't lack opportunities. The fact of the matter is the CEO loves me. Bob Whitman is our chairman and CEO. He loves me. He loves my wife. He loves my family. Now, listen, we argue. We disagree. We're of different generations. We see some things similar. We see some things very differently. We have very little in common in terms of our personalities. But he cares about me. So I keep staying. My longevity is almost in direct correlation to how much I feel the CEO cares about me. And we don't get it all right at Franklin Covey. But one thing we do get right is recognizing my level of engagement and my longevity is almost entirely correlated to how I am treated by leadership in the organization.
This is a great segue to talk about how, based on what you teach in the book, and I'm really going to encourage everybody to get the book, and I'll make sure they know where to get it in a second, but I want you to maybe tell us a little bit more about how we can become better leaders by applying the principles in the Management Mess book.
Well, so I wrote these 30 challenges and I kind of organized the book into very short chapters. I wrote, this is not War and Peace. This is not Good to Great, right? I wrote a book that was funny, a little irreverent, but super relatable. And each chapter is about 3 pages long. And I organized these 30 chapters, these 30 challenges, kind of about one per day. So 30 days. So if someone were to pick up the book, they would discover a different leadership challenge or also a leadership mess, if you will. Read it. I share a story typically around how I failed, not all the time, but mostly. And then I share some key takeaways on things you can do differently. I think the first 8 challenges are all organized around leading yourself. The next dozen, Melanie, are all around leading others. The last, I don't know, 8 or 10 are around getting results. Quite frankly, they're all sort of interchangeable. But I would probably start by reading the book either, you know, front to cover or picking out a challenge that you think is an area in which you have a bit of a mess. I mean, if you're self-aware, which most of us aren't as much as we think we are, we tend to know what our messes are. I'll tell you, I think one of the most important leadership competencies right now is vulnerability, is admitting your messes, talking about them openly, sitting down with your team and saying, you know what? I want to make sure that we have a culture here where people feel comfortable taking risks, where people feel comfortable making mistakes, where people feel comfortable telling the truth. And so when you admit your own messes, that just builds some psychological air for people to really talk about their messes and want to rise to a higher level. I'll tell you, one of the best ways to know if your leadership is lacking is if people are lying to you. If people are missing their forecast, if people are missing their product deadlines or their project timelines, if people generally aren't telling you the truth, it's not because they're liars. It's because as a leader, you've created a culture where it is not safe to tell the truth, where it's not safe to walk in and say, my deal fell apart, that $40,000 isn't coming in by Friday. Instead, they wait to the very end because they're so mortified for the retaliation or your temper or your screaming or your cursing or your pounding or your humiliation. If people are lying to you, it's a really good indicator that you've not made it safe for them to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I've seen that in action. And as a business owner, I think one of the things we have to be careful of, again, if we're kind of bringing this into the virtual contractors, virtual employees, this is a opportunity for you to grow. I have had to grow so much, Scott, to allow for people to not be perfect, but to make progress that I couldn't make on my own. And I know a lot of the clients I've worked with over the last 20 years, they say, I know I need a team, but I can't imagine letting somebody else make mistakes. It's like, it has to be okay for them to make a mistake.
Oh, wow.
You know?
Yeah. Can I riff on that a second?
I would love that.
You know, I think an enormous challenge that entrepreneurs face, and I'll empathize with you because I've been a business owner and I will be again someday. And in many ways, I feel like a business owner inside the company. I'm a shareholder and I'm a executive officer. It's hard to let go because this is your baby. This is your vision. This is your dream. This is your, like I said, you may have mortgaged your house twice or borrowed money from your in-laws, right? And your sleepless nights hitting payroll. I get it. But you will be in the same self-defeating cycle if you are not empowering people, if you're not coaching them, teaching them, investing in them. You'll be in the same victim mentality. You'll be the same person working 80 hours a week, wondering why everybody else is out at their daughter's soccer game or their son's piano recital. You'll become a toxic victim and a martyr, and then you will subconsciously start punishing people. You got to rise to the level of investing in people and realizing if I coach them now, if I am clear on what outcomes look like, what does success look like? What is my quality standard level? I'll tell you, one of the best pieces of advice I've ever gotten in my career, Melanie, was this quote from one of our co-founders. He said, nearly all, if not all, conflict in life comes from mismatched or unfulfilled expectations. So as a leader, if people aren't hitting their revenue goals, if the products are inferior, if systems aren't being put in place, it's likely because you've not taken the time to clarify expectations, to declare your own intent so nobody is guessing or they're suspicious of your motives, that you are very clear on what success looks like, and then you take that what sometimes may feel like fatiguing time to communicate, over-communicate, and say, this is what success looks like. Let me tell you how I would do it. You can do it pretty much any way you want to, as long as your outcome is the same as the one that I just described. Because when you prescribe the process and the behaviors, you will suffocate people. People can get to the same quality outcome as you do with different passions, different skills, different sequences. Now, some things need to be codified. I get it. There are processes that sometimes can't be deviated from. But generally speaking, if you're willing to, with insane clarity, describe what success looks like and what the quality standard must be, it can't be any later than this date at this time, with this level of quality, at this price, with this cost. Get there however you see fit. That is a culture people will thrive in.
That was a game changer for me in my own life and my own business. And I actually learned that about 28 years ago as a project manager inside Fortune 500. And it's true. This is the one thing that most entrepreneurs miss, because you're so focused on how do I get to the end, you delegate poorly. So mic drop moment, make sure you write this down. And I want you to recognize inside of yourself right now, as you're listening in, do you have some room to grow so that you move out of management messes and start moving into leadership successes? Scott, why don't you tell everybody where they can get the book and quick highlight on what the book is going to deliver.
Sure. So it's my first book, Management Mess to Leadership Success. It's in every bookstore, Barnes & Noble, Books a Million on Amazon. You kind of can't miss it. It did hit number one 6 weeks solid. It also won the Outstanding Works of Literature Award by BookPal. So I'm quite pleased with it. It's funny. It's raw. It's relatable. Here's what it's going to do. You're going to email me or you're going to text me or you're going to friend me on Facebook or LinkedIn or Twitter or Instagram and say, oh my gosh, I feel like I am you, because a lot of what I wrote, I think, was really uncharacteristically raw for leadership books. Most books are very academic and aspirational in terms of leadership books. And, you know, as a supposedly a leadership expert, which I think I am inside a leadership company, I made a lot of mistakes and I wrote about them in the book. So the book is going to give you permission to own your mess, and with return, you'll have other people in your company that work for you be able to own theirs as well. I think it's a great study book. Buy it for your leadership team. Buy it for your managers. I'm not trying to sell books. I don't actually make a dollar in the book. Franklin Covey makes some money. So I don't have any benefit of you buying the book other than helping people build their leadership skills. But if you want to deliver some messages to people on your team, let me do it for you. Have the book, read it for 30 weeks or 30 days, and, you know, get on a call with your team and discuss the issues. And I'll bet you a lot of people grow in their own leadership style. But make sure you grow faster than them, because they're going to be thinking about your messes unless you bring them up first.
Yeah, I love the idea of this being a study book. I've actually made a list of people that I want to buy this for.
Thank you.
Not that I'm giving them a subliminal message or anything like that. I believe you can also get the book on your managementmess.com site. I will link that up in the show notes if you would like to make it super easy to go find the book. Scott, I love everything we've talked about. And I know you told us a little bit about your journey of how you got to the point where you wrote about management mess. I always like to ask my guests, what is the boldest decision or action you've had to take to get to this level of success you're in today?
This is going to sound like a cliche. I started owning my messes. Mm. You know, I'm a stutterer. I have a very pronounced stutter. I've been through decades of speech therapy, speech pathology. I've had braces twice. I wear a retainer every day, every night. And I've had to really acknowledge the fact that, you know, there are a lot of words I can't say in public. I'm a public speaker. I had a podcast, I have a radio program. I slur a lot of my words. I have, you know, a lot of insecurities, and I have jealousies, and I could be a very petty person. I mean, I'm a human being. So I think the biggest, boldest thing I've done is become very comfortable talking about my messes. Now, I'm a Catholic, so confession comes easy to me, Melanie. But beyond that, I think one of the best things I've done is been the hardest thing, which is being comfortable, what I would call hanging a lantern on my own troubles. I am very comfortable talking about where I am great and where I am not. And I have found that it tends to diffuse a lot of people's ammunition against me. It's kind of disarming when someone hears me talk about, you know, I wish I could gain 10 pounds. I'm fairly thin. I'm 6'1" and I weigh 175 pounds, right? I'd love to gain 10 pounds. And I talk super fast. And, you know, I can fatigue people on my energy. I'm very comfortable talking about those things. And for a lot of people, it's disarming. And so for me, the hardest thing I've done is just that, is owning my messes. Hmm.
I think that's a level of vulnerability and authenticity that we need in our leaders. So I think that's a great demonstration. If you're looking to find what is the definition of a leader we want to follow, owning your mess, being willing to say it out loud and be a human being who's not perfect, but willing to keep growing. That's the kind of leadership we want more of in this world. So I highly recommend you get a copy of Scott's book. Buy one for yourself, buy one for everyone on your team. Buy one for all the leaders you know who could use a little bit of an edge moving towards being a more successful leader. And remember that leadership does start by focusing on how we lead better first. So, Scott, any last words before we wrap up today?
You are a great podcast host. I'm honored to be on today. Thank you for all the insights you brought as well. I learned, you know, it's a good podcast when we learn from each other. So thank you for your gift to me.
You are so welcome. That's quite an honor. Thank you, Scott. And as you're listening in, we will be taking this leadership conversation a little bit deeper in the Amplifier Success community. So if you are not yet a free member of that community, head over to Amplify Your Success Community. And let's talk about how you can take on one of these 30 challenges that Scott's brought to us and really amplify and grow your impact as a leader.
This is Melanie Benson, your host. Thanks so much for listening in today. If you want to catch up on any of the show notes and circle back on any of the resources we shared in today's show, head on over to the show page at AmplifyYourSuccessPodcast.com. And remember, you amplify your results faster when you're in a community of other people who are moving and shaking. Join us at AmplifyYourSuccessCommunity.com. One last thing, when you've gained insight from today's episode, help us share that and inspire other people by heading over to iTunes, subscribing, and give it a review. iTunes absolutely loves seeing these reviews pop up, and it actually helps boost my show's visibility. So I would be super grateful for your reviews. And as always, I love seeing your shares of these episodes on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Come find me over there. Tag me in your shares. I'll give you some social media love right back. So see you next week for another inspiring episode of Amplify Your Success Podcast.